Welcome to the preaching ministry of Dale Scribner, Senior Pastor of New Hope Christian Fellowship, located in Olympia, Washington. Let us join Pastor Dale as he shares today's message.
And there's a detailed outline on the back table for you to follow along. I can see by the clock that I'm not going to finish this message today, so this will be part one. Next Sunday is Mother's Day, and we will conclude this message next Sunday. And let me let you in on a little secret. Part two is better than part one. So be sure to be here next Sunday on Mother's Day. And as been our tradition since we started our church, every woman present and girl will receive a beautiful rose on Mother's Day. We're talking about the story of Moses today and how his birth took place. Right in the middle of a lot of heartache, confusion, and tragedy. Because you see, a king rose up in Egypt who was threatened by these Hebrew people. And even after the Hebrews were forced into labor, hard labor, Pharaoh was still troubled. We do not know why. Maybe because of the sheer numbers of the Israelites. Perhaps it was the faith of these Hebrew people. Maybe it was the tenacity of their spirit. Perhaps it was their obvious and unwavering confidence in Yahweh, Jehovah, Lord God. Pharaoh may have been an emotionally insecure man. I believe that he was. The storyteller wants us to understand that the number of Hebrews was sufficient to overthrow Egypt. He didn't like that, didn't want that. And so the result was this Pharaoh issued a terrible decree. He ordered that all male infants born of the Hebrew women were to be thrown into the Nile River and drowned. His executive order was given to the Hebrew midwives. These Hebrew midwives, however, refused. They simply would not comply with such a command. So Pharaoh called them before him in his palace. "Why have you done this?" he asked, "and allowed your boys to live?" The midwives used clever tactics in their response. They replied to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them." And the storyteller says, so God dealt well with the midwives. God looked favorably upon these family servants. And the message is clear for us today. Sometimes it's important for the people of God to be shrewd like these Hebrew midwives were. These Hebrew midwives exhibited a bright, quick-witted handling of the situation. The focus is upon Moses' mom. She kept him securely guarded and quiet when he was a very young baby. But once he was 3 months old, something had to be done. And so she decided that she was going to hide the child. And so she built a small basket of reeds from the river. She cemented the reeds together with some kind of tar or pitch. She placed her son, can you imagine this? She placed her son in the basket, wrapped him up, and set it quietly afloat among the tall grasses along the edge of the Nile. There were crocodiles in that river, snakes in that river. And as that mom placed that precious baby boy into the basket and pushed it off into the tall grass, what a heartache. She must have been crushed in her spirit. She was probably thinking, I will never see him again. She was heartbroken, devastated. So he went. and she assigned the babysitter to watch over him, his younger sister Miriam. Capture this in your mind. Here's a tiny child in a basket floating in the Nile River, and an older sister, perhaps 15 or 20 yards away, keeping diligent watch over that basket that contained her little baby brother. That setting has an inherent beauty of its own. If the infant Moses could have spoken at this point in our story, he probably would have spoken of the miracle of his sister Miriam, who loved him, stood watch over his basket in the river. So one day the daughter of Pharaoh, the princess of the land, came to bathe in the Nile. She heard the sound of a baby crying. Moses' sister, assuredly alarmed at this development, she probably thought, uh-oh, we're done for now. We have been discovered. It's all over. But you know what happened? The baby Moses captured the heart of this princess. And in one special moment, the daughter of Pharaoh broke the pattern of cruelty that had been ordered in Egypt. And the princess knew the edict of her father, but also she knew the innocence of this small child that she found in a basket. Her heart loved him, claimed him, and she decided, "Fooey on Dad! Heck with Dad! I'm taking this baby boy home." Now, here comes what may be the most fascinating part of this thrilling story embedded deep in the Old Testament. Moses' sister, she went to the princess and asked her, "Ma'am, would you like me to find someone to nurse and care for the child that you have found?" The princess was delighted. And so Miriam left at once. And guess who she got? She got her mother. And she brought her mother back to the princess. Wow. Now what happened next? The princess said, "Take this child and nurse it, and I will give you wages." Wow! Unbelievable, but it's true. Here is a statement to warm the heart of every mother, and next Sunday I'm talking about that mother. Here is a mother being paid by the state for watching and raising her own child. Isn't that thrilling? What Satan meant for evil, God made it for good. Moses' mother raised him in the palace of the Egyptian king. Evidence indicates that she was the one who saw God at work in all of this, and the whole scenario could have been coincidence, of course. It could have been blind luck, but Moses knew it was a God thing. She got her baby boy back and she raised him in the palace of Pharaoh. Can you believe that? It's true. This Hebrew mother faithfully told her son of their God in the midst of a pagan palace of pagan religions. She spoke God to that little boy. Joshebed told that young child stories of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and during the quiet evening hours, she would even whisper in Moses' ear the sacred name of Yahweh. That little boy was taught these Old Testament stories, sitting on the lap, I suppose, of his mom. Moses knew the sacred name of Yahweh before he was even able to talk. His mother told her son who he was and whose he was, whispered the name of Yahweh into that little boy's ear, and it resonated in his heart. My question today, outside the walls of this sanctuary, who is going to tell children's stories of Jesus to their children in their home? We have time for everything else in our busy schedule, but we have forgotten the power of a family altar or a family devotion, or call it a family powwow, whatever you want to put a name on it, where the family sits down, the TV goes off, the cell phones are put away, the video games are turned off, and we sit in a circle and we relive the stories of the Bible, and we teach our children the stories of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and the stories of Jesus. Where else are they going to learn these stories? Except in a home. And sad to say, I think the home has fallen down. It's unimaginable to me how a Christian couple or a Christian parent gives birth to a child and they don't talk about Jesus in the home. They don't read the Bible stories in the home. It's church on Sunday, and then goodbye church, goodbye Jesus, we'll see you next Sunday. But this mother of Joseph, of Moses, I should say, whispered in that little boy's ear, Yahweh. And that little boy knew and grew up knowing the stories of these great men of God. In the midst of plenty and privilege, who will keep the name of God alive today? In the midst of a host of secular gods, prolific lures, and growing materialistic expectations, who will say, remember, young child, you are a child of God. Remember that God alone is your strength. In the midst of the trappings of luxury and expansive lifestyles, who will whisper the sacred name in the ear of every child? Who's going to do it if the parents won't do it? The story of Moses is one of auspicious beginnings. The message of the storyteller seems clear, that God is intimately involved and present in every detail of our lives. God is present in the cleverness of the Hebrew midwives. God is present in the softening of the heart of the Egyptian princes, in the quick thinking of an older sister, and in the religious fervor of a mother. Note that it took four good women to build one great man. That was Moses. God is present. That's the gospel and the story. God is working out a purpose in history, just as God always has and always will. So, think about Moses. His mother sailed him into the Nile in hopes he would be saved. Pharaoh's daughter did just that until God commissioned him to lead the people of Israel. And so here's the punchline. Moses was saved not just from something, but he was saved for something. Every person who comes to know Jesus as their personal Savior is saved from sin and a self-centered life, but that's not the end of the story. God has saved you for something, and God has implanted within the heart of every believer a purpose and a meaning for life. And if the Christian does not fulfill that purpose, who is going to fulfill it? It's my faith that tells me that little Reese is going to be delivered from this disease. And she will be delivered for a purpose. What do you do in desperate times as the parents and grandparents look over the crib and see that little baby that we love so dearly suffer so? What do you do? Well, you argue and you debate and you get angry and frustrated and all the emotions thinkable. Bottom line is you unfurl your banner. That's what we do. We declare our loyalty to God and we shout our trust in His goodness, making clear to the world whose side we are on. We are on God's side. We affirm our submission to His will and we align ourselves against His sovereign purpose and we refuse to surrender to fear and self-pity and defeat. Here's what we do. We intensify our intentions and redouble our efforts to put God's man or woman, no matter what times are like, we are going to be that man and we are going to be that woman. Then simply and patiently, we entrust ourselves to God to save and to deliver our child. After all, He's the one that goes by the name of Deliverer. God has delivered us in the past. And He's going to deliver us in the present. I'll go back in the late 80s, early 90s, when our daughter, oldest daughter, was a student at Montanova Bible College. I went down there on Labor Day weekend to spend some time with her. And she said, "Dad, I got a headache." I said, "Take some Tylenol." "That doesn't help." I said, "Take extra strength Tylenol." "That doesn't help." She said, "I think we better go to the doctor, to the hospital." So we went to the hospital. Long story short, they admitted her to the hospital. She became paralyzed all the way up her body to her neck. And what a heartbreaking dad saw was his oldest daughter hanging on to the rail trying to walk in. And then the doctors told us that she would never walk again. She had this terrible disease, transverse myelitis. So again, I went to God. "What's up, God? What's up with this?" One day I walked into Good Sam Hospital in Puyallup and I saw that wheelchair pulled up alongside her bed. And I said, "God, if that's the way it's going to be, I accept it. Your will be done." You know the rest of the story. Becky, walk. She's walking today. She spent the night with her daughter in the hospital to give Dan and Sissy a break from the hospital. God delivered Becky. She's walking again. I think of my fine young son. I'm so proud of him. But you know what? We had some difficult times with Dan when he was a teenager, like most parents do. He would come to church. We had to hogtie him to get him there. He came to church, and he would sit at the back sound table. He'd put his head down. He would go to sleep while his dad was preaching. How you like that? Then it went worse. It got worse. He got so disrespectful and rebellious. But as a teenager, we told him, "Son, you got to get out of the house." One of the hardest days of my life was seeing my son walk out of the house with his duffel bag, not knowing where in the world he was going to go, but he would not stay at our house because of his attitude. Let's press forward a little while. Now here's my son Dan, stricken with MS. Long story short, you know the story. They moved in with us. Now here's Marianne and I with 5 grandchildren, 1 sick little granddaughter. Dan amazes me. Dan has so much spiritual insight, it blows my circuits. He knows the Bible as well as I do. He comes up with stuff, and I said, "Where do you get that?" "It's a God thing." He never could play the piano until he got stricken with MS. He sits down at the piano now and he plays these hymns of the church. that probably went through his mind when he, I thought, was sleeping as a teenager. Beautiful music coming from the hands of Dan at the piano. God is our deliverer. And just as God delivered mobility, Becky, and just as God turned Dan's heart inside out and around, upside down, and then some, and transformed his heart, so now Dan is truly a man of God. You heard him preach here. He can preach just as good as I can. And what a wonderful dad he is to those kids that he's responsible for, and his wife. What a wonderful mother she is. How diligently she parents those five kids. Such devotion that the two of them have to make sure their kids have good morals, good standards, that they know spiritual concepts. My grandkids, their kids, they're getting it. They're being taught. That's the kind of impact that Jochebed made on that little baby boy when she placed him in a basket. Let him go. Think of all of the emotion. She must have been crying her eyes out, not knowing that she would ever see him again. And just think of the impact that little baby boy turned out to make. How God chose him to lead 600,000 Jews out of Egyptian bondage. The lawgiver was given by God to him. Great man of faith was Moses. Part two of this message. You are not just saved from something. You are saved for something. You are saved for a purpose. It blows my circuits. It really does. We have lots and lots of people that are called Christians that are fed up, worked up, torn out, worn out, or for whatever, don't even go to church. I can't compute with that. But thank God for those of us who are faithful to our calling and are in the hands of God, willing to make an impact upon people that he brings into our relational world. Today we made an impact on people's lives. You saw three of them be baptized. We don't know what God's going to do with their lives, but he's going to do something. And so I sat on the edge of anticipation and expectation, waiting to see what God's going to do with their lives. That's why we sit in church every Sunday. That's why we dig into the wallet and we pay our tithes so we can afford to keep the ministry going and watch lives change. The last impact that I call to my mind occurred yesterday when this sanctuary was practically filled with people who came to celebrate the life of Deanna Clark. She's in heaven now because of the New Hope ministry. She got saved at New Hope, baptized at New Hope, grounded in the Word at New Hope. And if it weren't for New Hope, who knows where she would be? It takes all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. We're just one of them. But we make a tremendous impact upon people who walk through the doors of our church. Part two is better than part one. So I hope you come around next Sunday on Mother's Day, and we will give a rose to every woman and girl. Let's all stand together as we